We should, like, go and, like, hang out with Todd.
Whoa, it's Todd.
Yeah.
Todd's even cooler than we thought.
Boys, I'm looking for a fella who goes by the name of Todd.
Oh, yeah. He's cool.
Todd would make, like, a good manager or something.
Todd roll.
Welcome to another episode of the 206 Geek Podcast with your host Todd, the 206 Geek.
All right, this is another episode of the 206 Geek, and I am your host Todd, the 206 Geek. And today I'm going to be talking with Rico from Rico's Rants on YouTube and part of the Podaskew podcast. And my friend Shannon's also on the line, and we're going to be talking about Nightmare on Elm Street, the entire, like, all the movies. I even want to talk a little bit about the series. I don't know if you guys ever saw the TV series or not, Freddy's Nightmares. It was only on for 2 seasons, but yeah. So
I saw enough of it.
It was basically an anthology series, kind of like Twilight Zone. Yeah. Or the Friday the 13th series, which was not at all connected to the movies.
Right.
The difference was this actually had Robert Englund reprising his role as Freddy, but Freddy was only in, like, the intro and outro of every episode. He was very rarely ever in the actual stories.
Yeah, it was sort of like a precursor to Tales of the Crypt, because then Tales of the Crypt started and became wildly more successful.
Right, yeah. Well, I think the stories in Freddy's Nightmares were not great, but they weren't, like, I wouldn't say they were terrible, but they weren't nearly as good as the movies, and certainly not as good as Tales from the Crypt or even the Friday the 13th series. I thought that was actually a pretty good show.
I never saw the Friday the 13th series, so I'll have to take your word on that one.
Have you ever seen the show Warehouse 13?
No, but I do know of it.
Okay, or the show The Librarians. Okay. Well, essentially, it's that same kind of thing where they're going around collecting cursed items, bringing them back to the shop and storing them so those cursed items can't hurt or do damage to people.
Got it. So it's like kind of like a show based on the Conjuring type of mentality. You know, they get a cursed object, they vanquish it, then they hide it from the rest of the public and save them.
Well, Warehouse 13 is actually was a much better series, I think, in that these items were not necessarily cursed, but they had, like, these strange abilities that they could give to people. And they would have to wear, like, these purple gloves in order to pick them up so they didn't get, like, whammied by the item. And they would have to stick them in these static bags. They were literally like giant static bags you can get at the PC repair shop. And stick them in the bag and they go, and they would be nullified. Hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Warehouse 13, you can actually watch that on IMDb TV. The entire series is there. I don't remember how many seasons.
I got so many other things to watch right now. I'm just starting The Boys and
oh, dude,
a bunch of other random fucking shows.
I just finished watching season 2 of The Boys, and holy shit, I won't spoil it for you, just holy shit. You know, right.
I started season 2.
Season 1
was great.
Season 1 was fantastic.
The first episode of season 1, so I'm way, 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 way behind.
Yeah.
I'm like that asshole who's just like, hey, you guys hear about this show, Game of Thrones? Like, it's really good.
And it's on, like, 8th season, and they're on the last episode coming up on the following weekend. Yeah.
I mean, when Game of Thrones, like, the season series finale aired, and I was watching it, and I was, like, looking at everybody, like, complaining, and I was like, y'all fucking didn't go through Dexter like I did. Dexter was a real, like, kick in the balls for a series finale.
What was that show that J.J. Abrams did where people were stuck on an island? It was basically Gilligan's Island with weird shit.
Lost.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I watched like the first four episodes. I was like, yeah, no, this is really fucking weird. I don't get it. I'm going to go watch some real science fiction.
Yeah,
I heard that. Well, here's some interesting, and you guys probably know this, but the trivia that I remember hearing about how Wes Craven came up with the idea of Nightmare on Elm Street is that it was a combination of the story he read in the Los Angeles Times and of a childhood memory he had of a guy outside his bedroom window who looked like Freddy. He wore a dirty green and red sweater, and he had a fedora. And this story about this kid in the Los Angeles Times that refused to go to sleep because some sleep demon was trying to kill him. And he basically was hospitalized, and they forced him to go to sleep with some medication, and he died in his sleep.
If I can add to that, there are a couple of discrepancies. He actually had Wes Craven had a childhood bully named Fred Krueger.
Oh, didn't know that one.
That's actually his first film is called Last House on the Left. And there was a character named Krug. So like even going back to his debut, the name Krug or Krueger or Fred or Freddy was always being kind of thrown in an antagonistic kind of way. As for the article, it was not just one kid. It was actually a whole group of kids or teenagers of Asian descent, and they didn't know each other. It was already a bizarre situation, but the fact that all these kids were, you know, came from the same nationality, were experiencing traumatic nightmares, and it wasn't so much as a dream demon, it was just that they were just having crazy nightmares. It wasn't like a figure was stalking them,
right?
And you are correct in the sense that one kid in particular was withholding himself from sleep and depriving himself, was, you know, had a coffee maker in his closet with an extension cord, and they kept giving him sleeping pills, and he just kept not taking them. Like he would put it in his mouth and then spit it out. And like after the kid died, they found in his bedroom like a whole stash of sleeping pills that he had refused to take, and then eventually he did fall asleep. And they heard him thrashing and screaming while he was unconscious. And they ran in, and as his parents walked in his bedroom, his scream reached a pitch, and then he stopped. Like he died, like a split second before they reached his bed.
Oh wow!
And obviously that's the groundwork for Freddy, but it was also. He tried to think of for the weapon, for the glove, the iconic finger knife glove.
Right.
However you want to call it. And he got a mixture of what would be the earliest weapon that mankind would be scared of. It would probably be a tooth or a fang or a claw of an animal, like a saber-toothed tiger. And then he saw his cat scratching the side of his couch, and that's how he got the idea for the glove and the claw. And
nice.
He wanted to be a man-made thing. But to go back to the early thing about the homeless guy who scared the shit out of him, you're right. He was dressed up. He was a wino. He was a homeless guy. Fedora, and I think he had a trench coat, as is what is in Wes Craven's New Nightmare. He's the trench coat feature. And this guy was in the alley, and Wes Craven's looking out his bedroom window, and the guy just kind of has this feeling that someone's looking at him, so he looks up and sees young Craven staring at him, and so you know, Wes hides behind the window. He steps back from the window, and he looks back about 30 seconds later, and the guy is just still standing there, and actually kind of lunges his head forward, kind of like, yeah, I'm looking at you.
Yeah, what?
And then yeah, like, what do you like? And it was that maliciousness of someone going so far to scare a child. And there's actually a PS to that story, because I only heard that first tap, which is already scary enough as it is. But then the man started going to the back entrance to his apartment building and actually entered the building. And Wes went to his older brother and said, there's someone coming up. He scared the shit out of me. His brother grabbed a bat and was looking for the guy, but the guy didn't, like, he, like, wandered in, and then I guess he fucked off. Or he may have lived there. That's the other thing. He may have lived in the building or something.
Right.
But, yeah.
That actually gives me the image. Everyone has seen the Home Alone movie. There's that scene in the movie where Macaulay Culkin is looking out the window, sees the old man like taking his garbage cans out there. That's kind of the image I had in my mind when Wes Craven was telling this story about the dirty homeless guy outside his house when he's talking about it during an interview. It was either during an interview or it was that part of the new nightmare that he was when he was telling. What's her name? Who plays Nancy? But
Heather Light. Yep.
Yeah, Heather. Yeah, but I don't know. Yeah, that's.
Before it was a documentary, Never Sleep Again, which I actually did watch in preparation for this.
Nice
episode.
I haven't seen that. I didn't even know that existed until you talked about it. So now I need to find it. But
the creators of the writers and directors of that particular documentary did one called His Name is Jason. And it's all about the Friday 13th franchise, but less running time. Like the Never Sleep Again, with all the extra footage, and there's even like another, like there's two discs, and the first disc is like 3 hours long, and they just cover the entire franchise. But the first one is sort of like, it almost looks like it was made for TV, like an A&E Bravo type of segment where Tom Savini is at he's like introducing each segment about the Friday 13th movies. And like, he's like in a haunted house or he's in the cabin and there's like a body behind him. I think it's like Universal Studios, like Horror Nights or something. And they had a Friday the 13th segment.
Yeah.
He was filmed on those stages. And of course, if anybody's going to talk about Jason Voorhees, you can get Sean S. Cunningham, you can get Victor Miller, but you get Tom Savini, the guy who, you know, designed Jason. So the same guys did, well, let's do what we did with Jason with Freddy, and they expanded it so much. I mean, it's just got a huge source of information, and they do a whole segment about the second movie, which is, I mean, really interesting to talk about how it's basically a, like
right.
one of the gayest slasher movies ever.
The other thing that I didn't know this until after the remake came out, but apparently the original story, the original script for Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy Krueger was going to be a child molester.
That is true. And at the time, if I remember correctly, there were a bunch of child molestation controversies going on at the same time in the early 80s.
Right.
So they didn't want to blame on the controversy of kids getting molested by, you know, whatever it was, priests or schools or whatever.
Right.
And they said, all right, well, child murderer is bad enough. I know your stance on the remake, Todd. I actually have to kind of defend the remake to a certain degree, in the sense that the first Nightmare movie came out in 84, and as when you watch them now, they're kind of cheesy. They're kind of hokey. The first one, the third one, and New Nightmare are still dark and got some scary scenes to it. But as a public audience, every horror movie is tame in comparison now. I mean, it's you know,
right.
We have to up the scare factor. And what is worse than someone who just kills children? someone who rapes and molests children and then kills them or leaves them alive. I mean, you're talking about somebody who's so sick that they actually pulled the switcheroo on us, because in the remake, we're thinking maybe he didn't do it. Maybe he's pissed off and he's terrorizing these children out of revenge because they lied, that they say that he touched them.
Right.
And which makes us be like, oh, fuck, as an audience, are we sympathetic to Freddy Krueger? That's weird. And then it's revealed, oh, no, he did that shit. I mean, he's a straight-up true villain.
Yeah.
So, I don't have a lot of love for the remake, but I think it gets more hate than it deserves. But let's go back to the original. The original is it's not as good as it is, as we think. Like, it's still a good movie, and it sets the tone, and it's scarier than the other ones for the most part.
Yeah.
But it's kind of hokey, and, you know, I got nothing against Heather Langenkamp as a person, but she's not a good actress. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know. I came into the series watching the third one in theaters first, and I wasn't interested in watching those kinds of movies up until I saw the third one. I saw the third one, and I saw the. I went to see because I liked the music that was in the movie. I've seen all the videos on MTV at the time, and so I went and saw it. It had an element of comedy too that I liked about it. So I was like, okay, it's not straight like, you know, blood and guts and scare this and that and the other. There's some funny parts to it as well, and I liked that. So I went back and watched the original one. I think it was on VHS at the time. It was well before DVDs were ever a thing, but yeah. And oh my God, that movie was, to me, it was terrifying. It was just like the idea, and it was way darker in the first one than the third one. And at that point, I hadn't even seen Freddy's Revenge yet, which is the second one. And that one's pretty damn dark too. It's a bit different from the other ones in that he takes over somebody else's body and they do all the killing, which was, I thought was weird, but, the first one, it was, you know, the whole idea of, like, don't fall asleep because he'll get you was way scarier in the first one than I thought the third one. Because in the third one, there's just kind of, it is hokey. And from the third one on, it gets kind of silly and hokey. And that's why I think they got as popular as they did, because it was just that element of cheese to those horror movies. It wasn't just straight scare and teenagers, you know, girls with their boobs hanging out and girls and guys having sex out in the woods kind of shit. So I don't know. I see what you're saying though. I do. I mean, I bought the box set and watched all of them last week, and yeah, there's definitely some cheese to it. I mean, it was 1984. So yeah, that's the kind of movie. That's the kind of movies they were back then.
Yeah, it's true. And you're right. I mean, it's not your stereotypical slasher where it's a guy stalking you and you get to run away and shoot him in the face. And then he kind of, you know, gets stunned for a minute and keeps coming after you. It's the, we're not safe asleep. And if you keep depriving yourself of sleep, you will go crazy, you will lose motor functions, and you'll eventually go into a coma. So no matter what, he's going to get you.
Right.
That's the scary thing. Yeah. You know, it's one thing of like, well, how do you escape Jaws? Well, move to an apartment.
Stay out of the water.
You know, like, yeah, like how the fuck do you get away from a giant great white shark? You stay on the beach.
Ohio.
Yeah, like
you poop in a bag. You don't use toilets ever again.
How do I avoid Michael Myers? I mean, stay out of Illinois, I guess. Just
don't
lock
go
your
camping.
Or yeah, for Jason, yeah, don't go camping and stay out of New Jersey, because apparently it's supposed to be set in New Jersey, which I'm like, I was like, Florida maybe, where all the crazy people are. Yeah, I believe Florida. But you know, we all need to sleep. It's not even that we like to sleep or we want to sleep. We all have to and need to sleep. It's you know, we spend most half our lives or like a third of our lives or something sleeping, and we're incredibly vulnerable. So it is a brilliant tactic to scare us. Yeah. But I mean, see, I grew up with Freddy Krueger as, like, I was scared of the image. I never saw the movies until I was about maybe 12 or 13, but I knew of Freddy Krueger. He was everywhere. He was like Santa Claus. He was just this pop culture icon where you can't avoid him. I mean, every kid at one point in their life, you know, had like tape pencils or something or steak knives with fingers or they had those long fingernails that you get in a cereal box, like a Fu Manchu shit. And we all did this shit, you know, curled our fingers and we're tapping it on the glass or something. So he was resonant in our psyche just as much as, you know, Dracula or the Wolfman. You know, I didn't know Freddy's origin. I remember asking my older brother, I said, who is Freddy? What is Freddy Krueger? And he basically summed it up. He's like, he's kind of a ghost. He's just kind of a ghost that invades your dreams.
Boogeyman.
And
yeah.
Even that alone fucked me up. Like I was afraid of just going to sleep because of the boogeyman coming into my dreams, and I hadn't seen Dick, you know, I hadn't seen any of the movies.
Yeah.
I will add that if I ever saw Freddy Krueger's dick, that would be scarier.
Well,
I mean, imagine what he looks as burned as he does. Imagine what the fuck his dick looks like.
Oh shit, that's not an image I need, Rico.
Yeah. I'll tell you what it is. It's that snake that fucking, you know, shows up in the third one that tries to eat Patricia Arquette.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh god.
So if you had to pick one of the original movies before the remake, what would you say is your favorite?
I'll let Shannon answer this one first because I've been taking up all the dialogue, so
number three. It's my favorite.
Yeah.
I would agree. I would say three is probably my favorite, but I'm going to get a lot of flack for this. I have a soft spot for Freddy's Dead, the sixth one, because it was the first one I ever saw. And that, to me, is the best way if you get someone who's interested in horror films but is absolutely terrified.
Right.
Because I was that type of kid who was mystified by the horror section at the video store, but never wanted to rent them. I was just that, like, I would get a thrill just by looking at the covers and the back and reading about it. That was enough. It was kind of like looking at a roller coaster instead of getting on the fucking thing. I was
right.
I got like my little thrill just from that.
So,
but I saw Freddy's Dead, and it's so campy, and it's essentially a Looney Tunes movie.
It's like a comedy, the whole movie.
It has Roseanne and Tom Arnold in it, so it was yeah.
Dude, it's got Alice Cooper. It's
right?
Johnny Depp comes back for a little cameo doing the...
This is your brain on drugs? Brain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you get a very young Breckin Meyer.
Right? Holy shit, he had to have been like 15 or something in that movie?
Oh, I mean, he probably was at least 20.
He looked 14.
Yeah, he looked like a total baby. I mean, but like that is a lot of actors start out very early on horror films. I mean,
right.
Kevin Bacon, his first film was not Friday the 13th. It was Animal House. But his second movie was Friday the 13th. I mean, it's... You watch that movie, you're like, holy fuck, it's Hollow Man. What the fuck? And, I mean, you know, Patricia Arquette for Dream Warriors. And the Holy Grail is Johnny Depp.
Right.
Nightmare One,
Johnny Depp.
So the first one you saw was the one that came out the year you were born. You realize that, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, I didn't watch it, like, in the womb. I wasn't pulling a dream baby thing or with that. What was that fucking awful? What's the dream?
The dream child? Yeah, that one was so not good.
Suddenly the remake is starting to look pretty fucking good, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only problem I had with the remake was the whole, like, child molester thing. I was like, you know what, Freddy was, like, the anti-hero to me. So when you go around and make him, like, this, like, fucking pedo, I'm like, nah, god damn it, why'd you have to ruin it?
Wait a minute. Your problem with the remake is because they made the villain too much of a villain?
They made him a sick, depraved villain, yes.
But I gotta try and understand your rationale. You're trying to say Freddy Krueger was an anti-hero?
I thought so.
So, where was he an anti-hero?
I don't know. Maybe it was my sick mind. I used to root for Freddy to catch the kids.
I mean, there's one aspect to be like, yeah, kick his ass, Freddy. But at the same time, you're like, it's a dude terrorizing children. And killing them.
Teenagers, not children. Teenagers. Come on, teenagers are assholes. Come on now, we all know this. We've all been there.
Okay, so when is the right age to be slaughtered by a dream demon? 15? Because Nancy Thompson is a 15-year-old. She's not 18. She's not 17.
Right.
So when is it too young where it's all... Fred, Jason, Michael Myers.
I think what it was is when it went from just being a serial killer to a child molester and or, you know, sexual predators, where I had to draw the line. He was my favorite horror movie character, and then you had to make him this creepy, like, just creeper in general. I was looking forward to seeing that movie too until I started watching it, and he's like, Nancy, you were my favorite. And I'm just like, ew, no, stop. Gross.
Well, I mean, if Robert Englund said it, would it have been any better?
No. I think if Englund's Fred was a pedo, then I would have not liked those movies at all. I would have been like, all right, this is not cool. I'm not liking this. I'm going to go watch something else.
You are going to shit yourself when I tell you that Leatherface actually is a cannibal.
Oh, I know.
But why is that acceptable?
I didn't say it was. I never talked about Leatherface.
No. I'm just yanking your chain.
Oh, I know.
I'm just getting the logic of, like, hey, man, I want my serial killers to only kill teenagers, not fuck children. Like, what, I mean,
well, yeah.
Yeah, but if you're going to go dark and scary, you might as well go dark and scary.
There's ways to go dark and scary without, like, being a fucking pedo.
I mean, that's true, but, I mean, like I said earlier, they had to up
the ante. Let's just put it this way. When someone is found out to be a pedo in prison, those guys don't end up living.
Right.
So...
because they're villains. I mean, Freddy Krueger is the ultimate boogeyman, is he not?
Yeah, this is true. This is true.
So, you can't be the ultimate villain, the ultimate boogeyman, and still have standards. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I suppose.
Freddy's looking at Heather Langenkamp and be like, I mean, even the lines of dialogue where he says, how sweet fresh meat, that's a kind of creepy pedo line.
That was very close to the, yeah, that was on the.
Like a creepy bit, like. Pedo-ish, like in the other movies too. Like,
yeah, like, I mean,
sticking his tongue out through the phone and like right in their faces and stuff.
Like, for now, Nancy, like that's creepy. Like so,
like he's still a bit like pedo-ish.
Like, yeah. So what he's already doing is it may not be children, but like Nancy's supposed to be 15. He's a 40-year-old dead demon dude, which is incidentally my punk rock name. And
definitely got some creepy, molesty sort of.
Yeah, I mean,
I never picked up on that when I watched those movies. I never really saw him as just that kind of creepy dude, like trying to be all lecherous towards young women. I just never saw it that way. And he was a creeper because he wanted to kill people, but I didn't see him as a creeper as in wanting to, like, you know, give her the shocker, so to speak.
Some killer was like stalking me and was doing like stuff kind of creepy like that, I'd feel like I'd want to take a shower after.
I would argue that I think the average woman who watches Nightmare on Elm Street is probably saying, okay, if he catches me, he better kill me. I don't want him to do anything else. Because rape and assault would be considered far worse.
Yeah.
You know, than just, you know, a quick, easy kitty. Death. Yeah, this is Dino.
Dino!
But, you know, Todd, I'm not trying... I'm just
yanking. Oh, I know. It's, and I'm not upset or offended by that. I just like that was literally my only issue with that movie. Is like he was a creepy pedophile, and I just like, oh, dude, come on, take my favorite, you know, my favorite slasher film, and just make it just ugh, no.
Imagine how I felt watching the Rob Zombie Halloween. They took my favorite slasher, you know, character and made him a goddamn hillbilly. Like in this, I mean, you know, the remake I can, you know, is what it is. But the sequel, H Halloween 2, the H2 or whatever the fuck they called it.
I never saw it.
He's walking around without a mask on. And he's got a big ass beard. He looks like the lost member of ZZ Top. And he's 7 feet tall, he's got a long ass beard, and he like has like a hunting jacket, and he's just walking around the wilderness, and I'm looking at him and I'm like, he looks like someone my dad would hire to like do some gardening.
What was
like, hey, you need a meal here, come, you know,
go join Duck Dynasty.
I was gonna say Duck Dynasty more than ZZ Top.
Either way, man, it's not what I imagined from Michael Myers.
Yeah, baby. Yeah,
Freddy. Yeah, not that Michael fucking Myers. This is nothing to do with Nightmare on Elm Street, but I'll give you a little connection I discovered. So, both of you have seen the original Halloween, correct?
Not all the way through, but yeah, I've seen bits and pieces of it.
You gotta see Halloween. Don't. It's great. So you got Michael Myers, and then his enemy is Dr. Loomis, played by Donald Pleasance. Donald Pleasance is the first actor you see Blofeld, James Bond's mortal enemy, in You Only Live Twice. He was always the dude holding the cat, but you never saw his face.
Mm.
The first time you see his face, it's Donald Pleasance. And Blofeld was the inspiration for Dr. Evil.
Right.
Which stars Mike Myers. So you got Donald Pleasance, Mike Myers going full circle.
Nice.
All right. But anyways, back to the prime time, bitch, dude.
Right.
So when I first saw Nightmare on Elm Street, I was creeped out. I mean, I was creeped out from the very first image of the opening credits of him making the glove. And because it's dank, it's a boiler room, there's fire, there's rust, there's steam everywhere. It looks creepy. And then we just see this guy make this fucking thing. And that's all you need. Like, you could sit somebody down and say, fuck the rest of the movie. Just watch this and tell them not to be or someone just making this thing for the sole purpose of stalking, scaring, killing, shredding, whatever. Like, he didn't make that to make sushi. He made that as a fucking weapon.
Yeah.
It's horribly terrifying. But I was a 9-year-old insomniac who watched TV all night. And, of course, when I was 9, it was like 1989. And they were on, you know, USA and TBS.
Wait, was Nightmare on Elm Street on Up All Night?
I don't know, but they were, you know, on other channels and stuff.
Right.
Late at night and in the middle of the night, and I was up all night.
Were you scared the first time you saw it?
I was horribly terrified, like, not sleep. And my mom when we got the good, because at that time we didn't have VCR, so we rented VCR at the video store, and we would rent the entire series.
Oh, that must have been like at least $100.
And watch it all weekend. No, it wasn't that expensive. And we'd rent the entire series, and we'd binge watch it all weekend, and then I wouldn't sleep for the next week.
Was this when you were down in Humboldt?
Yeah, okay. This is when I lived in Humboldt. I grew up in Humboldt County, California.
Yeah, I'm on the Bay Area, so Humboldt.
Okay, I lived in Bay Area before we moved to Humboldt County, so.
Oh, where at?
I was raised in Concord.
Oh, no shit. I live in, currently I'm in Pinole, but I'm moving back to my childhood home. I grew up in Rockridge, North Oakland.
Oh, okay, yeah. I lived in Alameda for 9 years.
I lived in Alameda for a couple of years. Yeah, great, yeah. Okay. Todd's like, where? What? Is this on the street? What?
It's all good.
Yeah. In my 20s, I lived in Alameda for about 9 years.
I went to elementary school, fifth grade in Alameda. Elementary. And I did not have a teacher who was like Freddy Krueger. I'll just put that out of the way just to kind of go back full circle. I did not have ever a teacher or a janitor like Freddy Krueger.
That's good. Yeah, I think I'm the one who gave my little brother the horror movie bug, because when he was little, I was really into Freddy Krueger in Nightmare on Elm Street. And when I don't remember how old he was probably 7 or 8, I think.
Oh, why'd you do that to that kid?
He loved it. Were you kidding me? I couldn't get him to stop watching it.
That's a weird kid.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. You know,
before it was Freddy, it was Chucky. That scared me.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Chucky, that was terrible.
Yeah. Shannon, tell him about your cricket doll.
Damn cricket doll. Watch Child's Play. Time to go to bed. Go upstairs to my room. And there's Cricket, who's basically, I don't know if you know what Cricket is. It's basically like a buddy doll, pretty much.
Okay.
It has blonde hair and pigtails, and you put the little tape in its back, and you press play, and it talks with the recording.
Oh, it's like a Teddy Ruxpin doll
kind of thing? It's like a Teddy Ruxpin, but it's a girl.
Okay.
Blonde pigtails. And I walk up to my room to go to bed. I'm like 7, 8 years old. I walk up to my room to go to bed after watching Child's Play. And there's Cricket sitting on my bed staring at me with this smile on her face.
And now, back to the show.
We're friends to the end!
She's no longer, like, got a cute smile. She's got, like, the most demonic, evil, word, I'm gonna kill you and everyone in the house smile. And I swear to God, my mom, like, spent, like, 6 months worth of her paycheck to get me that doll for Christmas.
Oh, my God.
And, like, I only had it for, like, 4 months, and I was like, oh, hell no, this doll's got to go.
Right.
I had a Teddy Ruxpin and the tape, because I had the tape to go with it,
uh-huh.
And then the tape started getting old, so it was like,
oh, no.
And that was even creepier, it's like, hey, look, your doll can talk to you with this tape, and it was always fun to, like, get, like, a different cassette and put it in, just kind of like Black Sabbath.
Put that there. Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, I was that kid that was terrified of horror films, but I was intrigued by them. And it all kind of stemmed because my older brother both my brothers are 10 years older than me. So I was 6. My brother Joel was 16. And he said, you know, Chucky's on tonight. You know, you want to act tough to your older brother.
Right.
So I said, let's watch it. And we watched one kill of Child's Play 2. One fucking scene where Chucky's in the backseat of a car and he strangles a guy. He suffocates with a plastic bag and gets him to drive to a location. That's all I need to see. My dad comes out of the living room and says, what the fuck are you watching? Rico, go to bed. And I had a bunch of stuffed animals and action figures. And I had two older brothers that were, you know, tortured me with it. So little by little, my brother would walk by the door and, Rico, come out and play. Like, do that shit for years. And I finally got my revenge. One night, I went to go to the bathroom to pee. And I was like, I had nightmares for like 2 years. Like, I was seeing Chucky everywhere because throughout that time, Ride of Chucky was just coming out in theaters. So I was starting to get over it. And then I'm seeing this motherfucker get like over, like everywhere, yeah, like posters of him. And I'm like, oh, great. Now he's got a girlfriend. I don't need to know that this dude fucks. Like, Chucky got lucky. Great. That's awesome. I don't need to know that. And now I'm thinking, like, there's two dolls that are going to come after you. Like, I couldn't go to another little girl's house because she had Barbies. Like, I was freaked out by Barbies. Like, movies of, like, small soldiers, which was, like, the new thing. Like, hey, toys come to life, and they're your friends. And I'm like, fuck that. Toy Story is a horror film. It's just not scary. Toy Story and Child's Play both have a kid named Andy with toys that come to life.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah.
So I went to go to the bathroom to pee, and my brother was already in there, and he heard me coming, so he turned off the light. And I opened the door, and I reach for the light, and it's dark, and he grabs me in the dark and lifts me in the air and, like, like screams in my face. And I screamed and started pissing all over him. And he's realizing that I'm pissing on him, and he freaks out and drops me. And so now I hit the ground, like the, you know, the ceramic tile, pissing all over myself in the dark, screaming, scared out of my mind, thinking Chucky grew to 6 feet and picked my ass up. And my dad runs in, turns on the light, sees one kid on the ground crying, looking around wildly, covered in his own piss, and sees the other one, older, standing there, screaming and pissed off and pissed off. Just looks at the both of us like, what the fuck are you guys doing? My other brother, dead asleep, just fucking slept through the whole fucking thing, woke up well rested, and sees us all looking red-eyed and pissed off and tired. And he's like, what'd you guys do last night? We're like, fuck you, Alex. I told that story at my brother Joel's wedding. So
that's awesome.
That's how you get your revenge, motherfucker. If I really wanted to get true revenge, I would do to him what he did to me and show his kids Child's Play. You know, because I got nephews. I'd be like, hey, you want to watch a movie? It's about a doll that comes to life. Oh, like Toy Story? Sure. There's a kid named Andy. Let's watch this shit. But I think my brother would actually punch me. My sister-in-law would definitely fuck me up if I did that. But anyways, back to fucking the Krug man.
The Krug man. Yeah, you know, and I'm looking at some of these other trivia bits that I've found on IMDb. And it says here, according to Robert Englund, he based his physicality of Freddy on Klaus Kinski's performance in Werner Herzog's Nosferatu the Vampire from 1979. England was also says on his DVD commentary that in his mind, the backstory for Freddy was based on something from his own childhood. On Valentine's Day, when England was in school, everyone in the class made Valentine cards for one another, but there was one boy who received no cards from anyone. England theorized that this boy went on to become Freddy.
Oh.
Todd, I think we lost you for a second.
Did you?
Yeah, we after the Valentine's, he stopped talking.
Oh, okay. It says, he says, but there was one boy who received no cards from anyone. Robert theorized that the boy went on to become Freddy.
I could see that. I could definitely see, like, you know, he was a lonesome kid who was pissed off the world. I could see that.
I could totally see an incel becoming Freddy Krueger. Especially the new version.
You can't watch the new version. You gotta see the new version.
I have seen the new version. I've seen it twice. I watched it a second time because I wanted to kind of like, because I saw it in theaters, and I was so annoyed by it in theaters, I didn't want to watch it again. So years later, I decided I was going to watch it again just to see if I still didn't like it. Like, I hated it while watching it in the theaters. And there were elements that I thought were pretty cool, and I liked what they updated. But they're just the whole, like, pedophile thing still bothered me. So,
fair enough.
But,
I've seen it a couple times. I liked kind of the little, like, throwbacks to the original.
Homages?
What's her name? Boyfriend? Whole scene where he's, like, in bed watching TV with his headphones on.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost exactly, like, shot for shot, the exact same as the original scene.
Right.
Well, no. Like, no one in the remake gets sucked into a bed. There's a...
No, that's a different show. Wait, no, yeah. But he's wearing, like, almost the exact same outfit as Johnny Depp was wearing.
Mm-hmm.
The room is almost the same. The TV is almost the same. I mean, like, it's literally almost the exact same.
The only difference was he wasn't on a waterbed.
That's a different movie.
Oh, wait. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's right. That's four. That's a different kid entirely. But no, he got pulled into his bed in the first movie, I thought.
Yeah.
Johnny got sucked into a bed, and they did that with a revolving room.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And they did the same thing with the... Well, they first used it for Tina's death. They did death, Johnny Depp's character. They didn't realize that all this water, the fake blood, was going to be spitting... So it fucked up the axis. So water sloshing... So instead of it going upside down, it just kept spinning, and they had electrical currents. Like, water was sloshing on, like, electric wires. So, like,
oh, shit.
Wes Craven and the director of photography were getting zapped.
Oh, wow.
Whenever you hear a filmmaker say, oh, man, that movie almost killed me, this almost fucking killed these fucks.
Oh, shit.
Like, but it makes it so much better. Because when you watch that movie, when you watch that scene again, you see the water on the ceiling kind of going in a direction. Like, it looks like it's flowing to the left or to the right. And it gives it this kind of distorted anti-gravity kind of thing, like Freddy, our balance and gravity, and he's messing with the real world. So it gives it kind of a dream-like, nightmare-like absurdity.
Right.
So it was a happy accident, but yeah, it almost fucking, like, it shocked the hell out of everybody. And they were, like, grabbing the cameras, like, fuck the actors, save the camera. They had, like, such a low budget. And New Line was at its early, early, early days. Like, Bob Shea was just... Bob Shea, you know, the producer of all the Nightmare films, said, like, New Line Cinema was the house that Freddy built.
Right.
It gave them all their success, and then they managed to branch out and try other genres, like The Mask. There's Something About Mary. I mean, I saw that New Line Cinema logo more often than any other movie. New Line had its pockets, you know, lined with all sorts of films.
Right.
And we saw Lynn Shay and everything. Bob Shay's sister was, she eventually had a career of her own in the Insidious movies.
That's right. Lynn Shay. The first movie I ever saw her in was in, what was that movie? It had Woody Harrelson in it, and it was about a bowling professional who was kind of a has-been.
Kingpin,
yeah. I saw her in that. She was like the landlady, and she looked all gross and nasty. But yeah, I've seen her in a bunch of other things since then.
Yeah, she was in There's Something About Mary. She plays Mary's neighbor, older friend, the one with the dog.
Okay.
And she was in a lot of the Nightmare films. She was in the first one. She played the teacher. And as well, he played a teacher. He played a ticket booth guy in A Nightmare and Freddy's Dead. You see them a whole lot. Like Lynn Shay's in a lot of horror. She's sort of like a second tier scream queen, so to speak.
Right. Well, so
what did you guys think of Freddy's Revenge?
I didn't dislike it. It's not my favorite of the Freddy movies. It's certainly not the worst. I thought it was, like I said earlier.
What did you say the worst is?
The worst one of. I think Freddy's Dead is probably no. The Dream Child is the worst.
Number 2.
So like 4. No, 5. 5 is Dream Child. I think that one's the worst one. Number 2 was weird because it was different because he was using one of the kids to kill people. That was just strange to me. It was different from the first one, and it was definitely different from the third one, which was the first one of the movies that I saw. Because that movie came out the year I was a freshman in high school, 1987. I saw that like probably right. It was in February, so it would have been after winter break. But you know, maybe it was during spring break or something. I don't know.
Freddy's Revenge is a really weird movie because you can view it as both a homoerotic horror film as well as a homophobic horror film. You could look at it as it's all about Jesse, who is essentially a male scream queen. You know, I'm not
but
typically after films, you have the lone girl, the lone girl survivor, you know, in the Laurie Strode, the Alice of Friday the 13th and so on and so forth. And they made it a young man who, by the actor's admission, screamed like a girl. Like he screams like a girl throughout that whole movie.
Yeah.
Very high pitched. And he has come, he's now out. He's actually living with HIV or AIDS. I think it might be AIDS at this point. But
bummer.
He was aware of the gay context and he was like pissed off because he kept thinking like they were like, people knew that he was gay, but he hadn't publicly acknowledged it. And he felt like it was them kind of
outing him,
all the attention on. Yeah, they were kind of outing him against his own right. He you know, they did it without really consulting him. And because all the attention was all this gay imagery on his character.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely, I don't remember that much of that part of the movie when I first saw it, but I definitely noticed it when I watched it this last week. Wow, I don't remember all the Leather Daddy shit. This is just, wow, okay.
What a bizarre sequence in general. Like, okay, he's got insomnia, so he goes to a gay BDSM bar, which, by the way, the bartender was played by Rob Shay. So there's your little cameo. And they said he never looked better because he was in full-on leather BDSM outfit. And they were like, Bob, you've never looked better. but he like, and then he sees his gym teacher, who instead of like, I don't know, calling the dude's parents and say like, I caught your son, like you gotta, like, he takes him to the school after hours and makes him run. It's like, what a weird mindset for the gym teacher, who like, if you want to talk about pedo, I got more of a pedo vibe from the gym teacher than I did Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, definitely.
The gym teacher was pretty
I would like weird. To clarify, I don't think that homosexuals are automatically pedophiles, but this guy was definitely in a league of his own.
Right.
The creep factor.
Right.
And then Freddy fucking like rips his clothes off and he like has balls bludgeon him repeatedly, all those soccer balls, all those tennis balls. It's subtle, but it's obvious. It's balls hitting somebody homosexual in the face repeatedly.
Oh, jeez.
Like testicles.
Oh, my God.
And then they have him, you know, tied up with, and then they whip his ass. And it's just, it's such a weird thing. And then this is, I'll give you guys this. They actually did not want to have Robert Englund come back, because Robert Englund's agent was now saying, oh, shit, you want to do Freddy's Revenge, you're going to need Robert Englund. And they're like, no, he's asking too much money. We'll get anybody.
Right.
So they filmed that scene first, and they just got this stuntman or this extra. They, like, paid a kid, like, extra, put him in the makeup and everything. And the only time you ever see Freddy not played by Robert Englund in the franchise, apart from, like, the big wrestler dude in the fifth one,
right,
is this extra who walks out of the steam towards the gym teacher. That's not Robert Englund. And he walked just kind of like, you know, schmaltzy. Like, he didn't really, he just kind of walked lazily. And they saw, they're like, oh, fuck no, we got to get Robert back, pay him what he wants. So if you rewatch that scene again, that's him not being Robert. Or vice versa.
Right.
But yeah, there was just a lot of, like, you could look at it as, okay, it's C struggling with being in the closet. It's struggling with his homosexual identity or his bisexual identity.
Right.
I mean, he makes out with his girl, and then he freaks out and then goes straight to his male friend's house, who very clearly says, like, I just made out with such and such, like, and you want to sleep with me? Like, what the hell are you doing here? Like, there's all these, it is the implication that Freddy is the fear of being gay.
Oh, wow. Freddy,
he would stalk and torment a young, repressed, a gay man who's not dealing with his homosexuality. But here's the flip side. It could be considered homophobic in the sense that, how do they vanquish Freddy in that movie? Well, at this point, Freddy has taken over Jesse, so now, quote unquote, Jesse's gay fully, right? And how do they vanquish him? Kisses Freddy, vanquishes, and now Jesse is fine. He's, you know, Freddy is gone, his gayness is gone, and all it took was the kiss of a good straight woman.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, I know I'm really deep diving in this, but, like, you could look at this movie as both a challenge for, like a blessing for someone to deal with their insecurities and their repressed sexuality.
Right.
Or it's, you know, I'm not saying the filmmakers are saying, hey, you know, all it takes is one good lady to make the kiss the street, kiss the gay advocate. But however you want to interpret it, I mean, Freddy's Revenge is sort of the catcher in the rye of horror films, because anybody can interpret it in a multitude of ways.
Right.
So it's, I mean, I watched that movie. I mean, like I said, the fact that Mark Patton, who played Jesse, made his own documentary, which I bought, but it's yet to see. And it's called Scream, Queen.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm assuming it's all about how he felt pissed off that they kind of,
I want to watch that. It's on Amazon, but it costs money.
I bought it on DVD and had it mailed to me, so it was only like $10 for me, so.
Yeah.
How gay is Freddy's Revenge? Really gay. Like, really, really gay.
Yeah, no, I like I said, I didn't catch any of that the first time I watched it, but I definitely saw it this last time. And I was like, wow, I do not remember this part at all. It's quite possible that I wasn't paying that close attention the first time I watched it, because I think it was a rental. And and I do this today. Like, I'll be watching a movie, and next thing you know, ooh, squirrel, you know, and I'll be off doing something else while it's still playing on the TV, you know. And I was doing that this morning.
You know, horror movies are mostly just for, like, a horror movie is kind of a party movie. You know, you have your gang of friends and you're drinking beer or whatever, and you're laughing at people getting decapitated, you know. But I'm the type of asshole who, like, wants to focus on everything. I care about movies so much that I will find, you know, I'm a real movie buff. So I'm, like, looking at, what the fuck did this line mean? Why did that angle mean that? Like, I love movies to the point where it's sickening.
Right.
But even if you, I have problems with Freddy's Revenge. It has nothing to do with the gay features or the gay symbology. I just don't like the fact that they were disregarding the rules that Wes Craven was sort of setting up.
Right.
Like, having Freddy, the whole pool party scene makes no fucking sense to me.
Right.
Like, Freddy's around, he's slashing people, and they're jumping in the pool, and, like, he's able to bend reality and make the water boil, and then he walks through a fence and it's fire and he just disappears. And I'm like, but, like, wait, isn't he in Jesse's body? Isn't he, you know, isn't he Jesse's boy instead of Jesse's girl? Like, what the fuck is this? I don't understand.
Right.
And the chick who totally looks like Meryl Streep but is not Meryl Streep.
Like, right.
What the fuck? Like, were we all like, what the fuck? Did Meryl Streep, like, get a slow, like, part in her career? What the fuck is this? Sophie's Choice. Fuck.
Yeah, I had to Google that lady when I was watching the movies. Like, that this looks like Meryl Streep, and I looked it up. She's not even related to Meryl Streep. They're not even related.
And she doesn't look like Meryl now. Like, she looked like Meryl Streep then, but I saw what she looks like now, and she kind of vaguely resembles Meryl Streep, but not to the point where she was when she was, you know, 20.
Right.
When she was 20, it was like, holy shit, she looks more like Meryl than Meryl's daughter.
Right? Yeah.
It's just, I don't, Freddy's Revenge was just weird. Like, you know, I get they have to do the kitschy thing of, hey, we vanquished evil. Oh my God, evil is going to show up at the end for one last scare to confuse us and make us think, was this whole thing a nightmare? Like, I think the ending of Nightmare on Elm Street, the first one, is bullshit. I don't understand how, like, I get the fact that he wanted to make it a lone movie and then keep it open for sequels. That was the difference between Wes Craven and Bob Shea. Bob Shea wanted to keep it open-ended just in case. And Wes was like, fuck no, it's a standalone movie. And you see that because Nancy and her friends all jump in the Freddy car and drive, and then the Freddy car kind of, like, comes alive and takes off. And then, like, her mom is waving at them, and they suck her through a fucking little window in the door, and you're like, what? Like, yeah. So Freddy is, the whole thing was a nightmare? And then, if that's the case, then how does Nightmare on Elm Street 3 make sense? Because clearly Nancy is alive, so she didn't die driving off to the sunset in the Freddymobile, and you're just, it's kind of impossible to watch this whole series and have some coherency. Like, it's just not possible.
Yeah.
They tried to kind of keep it together with 4, like, starting with 3, they tried to kind of keep a linear plot. Like, 3-5 tried to kind of be its own little series, and then you got to first, they just said, ah, fuck it, whatever. He's pissed off, he's old, and he's got a kid, fuck it.
Yeah. 4 and 5 are kind of one series.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know. There was, it was, I think they were just running out of ideas in 4 and 5, or they were just like, all right, these will work. We need to keep, the cash flow going to keep the studio open. You know, we need, I think that's what happened.
Everyone was still doing successful. I mean, they were becoming more successful in the mid-90s, but yeah, they were trying to, I mean, especially between 4 and 5, like they made the fourth one Dream Master, and then they made the fifth one Dream Child like a year later. Like, it was, the release date was really, really quick,
right,
to the point where it was just like, wait, did they film this back to back? No, I mean, they did, but with separate like filmmakers. Like Randy Harlan did 4, and then I don't remember who the fuck did 5.
Stephen Hopkins,
Stephen Hopkins, thank you, who 5 had some really interesting visuals. Like it did, a lot of parts to it that is like, it's like a David Bowie music video. Like, it's real gothic, and there's the staircase where it looks like Labyrinth. It looks like Freddy Krueger in Labyrinth with David Bowie.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah, they had that whole sequence in that where he was basically in like an Escher painting, right?
Three, I mean, we are all unanimous. 3 is the best. 3 is the one where you have some of the most interesting kills. You have characters that are strong, well-written, well-acted, and they actually can fight back. Obviously, Freddy's going to fuck them up, but
right.
we have characters that we're rooting for. You know?
I think the difference between the movies is, okay, the first one came out in 84, the second one came out in 85, so like literally like a year later. Like, I mean, yeah. November 9th in 84 was the first movie, November 1st, 1985 was the second movie, and then the third movie came out on February 27th, 1987, and then the next one was, you know, a year later in August. And then the fifth one was like actually 12 months later, almost to the day, in 89. Yep. So, I mean, it's just they really didn't have much time to really kind of do these movies. I think that's part of that. I think that's why those last two weren't as good, is because they probably already had ideas in place when they were making the fourth one. They were already probably working on the fifth one as far as pre-production and shit, and they just kind of like, once the other one came out, it still was making good money, they went and finished up the fifth one.
So. Well, if you said it yourself, the biggest gap is like 2 and 3.
Right, there's like 2 years between the two. Yeah.
And if you look at that, Dream Warriors has got some of the best storytellers writing that screenplay.
Right.
Wes Craven. You know, that's his baby. If anybody's going to come back and try and fix this franchise, it's going to be him. Then you get Frank Darabont. Like, the dude who did Shawshank and Green Mile and, like, you know, The Walking Dead, he started out on Dream Warriors.
Oh, wow.
And not only that, you get oh, shit, what's his name? Chuck something.
Chuck Russell.
Chuck Russell, thank you. So I knew Chuck Russell as the guy who did the movie The Mask. So he added comedic elements to it.
Yeah, nice.
So you get these great visionary writers that actually, like, gave a shit about the film. And the third one's the best because it had the most, okay, we're going to have the best deaths. We're going to have the best actors. I mean, Patricia Arquette, dude.
They had a great cast of characters, too. The actors were all good.
I had one major issue with 3, though, with Patricia Arquette. Her screaming and yelling, the high-pitched voice.
I mean,
it killed my ears.
Yeah. Like
10 minutes of the movie, I was like, she could just lower it like an octave.
Yeah, she still wasn't as bad as Jesse in the second movie, though.
Neither of them were as bad as Heather Langenkamp. I mean,
good
Heather
point.
Langenkamp finally got good in New Nightmare.
Yeah, that That's was the best one.
Third time. But, like, and she was playing herself. Like, yeah. You know, that was. So, if her logic was, oh, I can't do that, bitch, it's you. Like, try.
Right?
I mean, there's a part in New Nightmare where they actually. Heather Langenkamp did actually have a stalker who was, like, calling her, leaving her creepy voicemails and all that shit.
Yeah.
And Wes Craven knew about it, obviously, and he asked her permission, like, I'm writing a new Nightmare movie. I want to feature this. And she's like, okay. Like, and it was still kind of her dealing, like,
right. with
that whole situation. So, life imitating art, art imitating life, so to speak.
I actually...
It's such a meta movie, so it works perfectly.
I think that New Nightmare was probably my second favorite next to the Dream Warriors, only because... I liked how they reinvented Freddy, and I liked how they went ahead and used the footage of the actual earthquake that happened during filming in the movie.
Yeah.
So that was like a legit real earthquake in that opening scene.
The only thing that I don't like about the Freddy of New Nightmare, and it's nothing to do with the design, it's the thumb blade. It looks stupid. It looks awkward. They should have just kept it at 4. And even Robert later said, like, it was really hard to maneuver that. It was, you know, he's like, I spent so many years doing this, and then having this third awkward one is just weird, and he couldn't do it. He also, when you were talking about how he based Freddy on Klaus Kinski, that's correct. He also kind of viewed it as a Jimmy Cagney of, like, horror characters.
Wow.
Jimmy Cagney of the old 30s gangster movies had a kind of a stance. Like, he kind of stood with his legs kind of stretched out, kind of like a tough guy kind of look. And as soon as Robert put the glove on, it's heavy. He said it's really heavy. So when you have let your arm drop, your shoulder drops. From all the weight. And he thought to himself, this is his gun. This is his six shooter. So he was looking at it as like
holding a gun.
You know, like, yeah, like he viewed this as, I'm going to let the arm drop, the shoulder drop, to like let it know that this is like really heavy and I have to be careful with it. And of course, every time someone put the glove on, they closed their fingers, the blades cut themselves in the wrist. Every single time, because it was real fucking knives. They didn't know what they were doing. They actually took steak knives, flipped them over, dulled out the sharp edge, and then sharpened the dull edge to give it a more unique look. And so they were dealing with real fucking knives. So of course, everybody cut their wrist at some point.
Oh, shit. Yeah. No, I dug the idea of him being a demon in that movie too, and I was hoping when they did that that was gonna restart the franchise and they were gonna continue doing him like that, and then that was the last one until 2003 when they did Jason or Freddy versus Jason. So, what is your guys' feeling on Freddy versus Jason?
Shannon, what were you saying? I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I was going to say, I loved the New Nightmare. I liked that they added the premise of months of aftershocks occurring. After, like, the 89 earthquake, we had, like, months of, like, 5.0 earthquakes. And it was really unsettling. People were on edge.
There's a lot of New Nightmare that's great. The fact that you see that talk show sequence where Heather and Robert Englund in full-on Freddy makeup goes out and he, you know, waves to the audience and there's a bunch of kids wearing Freddy masks and have the glove and everything. That's based on a sequence or an interview out here in the Bay Area. Wes Craven and Robert Englund went out and were interviewed, and it was a lot of, you know, discussing whether the movies were harmful to children, and Freddy comes, you know, Robert comes out.
Tune in next week to hear the rest of this chat with Rico and Shannon.
And now is the part of the show where I like to thank those who support the podcast. And if you also want to become a podcast supporter, you can go to support.206geek.com. Thank you, Leanne P., for your support.